Dungannar boys, the footy season's rolling. All the episodes are going out, and there's everyone out there now expecting a shout out from us, and we love giving these. We've got a couple of good ones this week to the Murray Gummers team, who's trying to raise money to go over there to Samoa to take in a women's team and some junior teams. We want to wish them all the best with their endeavours there as they raise money. And that'd be spectacular to see our people go over there and play in Samoa and experience all of those things. And also another really big one there to William Dave O'Hickey in the NBL with his Wollongong Hawks there. They won on the weekend. And a really touching moment there with Matthew Dellavedova, who was given the MVP of the NBL finals. He gave the award to Davo. And Davo's a Redfern kid, grew up with my son, went to school with my son, and wow, a spectacular young man. It's great to see him doing so well in the NBL. But I remember a basketball player that used to play in the NRL back in the day. Yeah. Slam dunk the ball over the goalpost all the time. And tell us about basketball. It was something that you had as an option as a professional career at some stage, yeah.
Oh, I loved it. That was my dream. I aspired to be an NBA player, but all the boys got a bit taller. Some grew 6'5", 6'6", so I was out of it. But, you know, I think Jerome Buller, like, he was playing over in the States. He was one kid that was really good at basketball. Chuck Mundine, you know, we know that he was a good baller. But there was a couple of players that played at the Knights, Peter Shields and Matt Parsons. Like, they were like 6'7". 6'6", you know, forwards that were playing in the game, and, you know, it was awesome, you know, watching them. I think you go to each club now at Excellence Centre and you'll see a basketball ring and everyone wants to be an NBA player, don't they?
Chetback, could you ever slam dunk the ball over the goalpost?
Nah, I couldn't jump too high, Dino. The old saying, white man can't jump.
you didn't have to do that to me straight away, brother. Well, let's moving on to the footy. And T, I remember your basketball exploits when we played. It'd be me and T going one-on-one there, and he'd always get me with the height. Now, it was the footy on the weekend that was exceptional, and particularly on Saturday afternoon down there at Shark Park, 3 p.m. It's no better time slot in the competition, but the Sharkies up against the Rabbitohs there, and it's their halves that continue to stand out for me. Nico Hines and Braden Trindle, Will Kennedy playing exceptional off the back of it, but how good are these halves going and the combinations going down there? And they really set it up on fire on the weekend down at Shark Park.
Yeah, they're one of the best halves and probably spine in the competition. Trindle's really taken another step forward. He's really elevated his game, and I think he's the main man down there at Cronulla. Look, Nico's playing a lot better football than he was probably towards the back end of last year, and their combination together has been great. Braden's kicking game, he kicked 2 40-20s on the weekend, and like you said, Kennedy as well coming into that mix. I think it's just a really good balance there at the Sharks, but Nico's having a lot more touches, but I think Braden's having the key touches. You know, he's putting them double shapes on that left-hand side with Iro. And again, he's really taking them on with his football and his running game as well.
Now, T, we see him came into All-Stars a few years ago, Braden. He always had the skills and ability, but now he's got the maturity and the confidence to be the key playmaker down there. And I think he is the number one playmaker at the Sharks.
Yeah, you're right, Dino. And I think, you know, it goes back to those last few years where Braden was playing All-Stars. And then last year, I think Nico, he had a bit of an injury spell and you know, Trindle had to take a bit of a leadership role there. And you could see him growing in that position. And now I feel like they're complementing each other. Yeah. Like, I feel like they're building a really good combination together. And it just goes off the back of, I think, Nico having a rest last year through injury and just giving Braden a bit of that leadership, and now they're coming in because they've got a powerful four pack, you know, they've got an elusive back five, they've got a really good team, and I feel like if they get early play to balls for players like Tricky and Nico, they can play really good footy.
Yeah, and on the back of that too, like, the Sharks are going great, but I think the Rabbitohs are going great too, and we've got to give the Rabbitohs and especially Wayne Bennett a bit of a rap for how they've started the season. Started the season 2-1. They were down pretty heavily on the weekend, but fought their way back. And that's usually a good sign of what it means to the club, but also the coaching as well. There's no way that South should be 2 wins and 1 loss, in my opinion, from the roster and from the injuries that they got through the preseason. And, you know, I probably just want to touch on Wayne a little bit more. I think he's influencing around that club and the belief he's given a lot of these players, especially Humphreys. We've seen Cody Walker's game to start the season fantastic. I feel like, you know, he's had a real big influence on that club to start the year, and I thought that they competed, especially, you know, towards the back end of the year, even though they just didn't have the class.
Well, Wayne's influence started months ago. It started with Latrell Mitchell and what we saw and his attitude turnaround and his conditioning, and he looks... Everyone can't wait to see Latrell on the football field this year. And what is it about Wayne that he has this effect on everyone? It's, you know, he comes in, he just elevates the whole team. Well, you've been coached by him. Tell us about it.
Yeah, like Wayne is really good when it comes to relationships with the players. There's usually like coaches that are out there, they're very football orientated. It's football, 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 and after it, you know, you don't really have a relationship with the coaches. But Wayne, he really hones in on his players, builds that relationship, and then he keeps everything simple from your pre-season training, your fitness. Like, it's a lot of games that he plays, and it's highly competitive games for conditioning drills. But when it comes to the actual footy piece of it, if you look at it, all Souths are doing is just playing an arm wrestle with teams. Mm-hmm. And from there, you know, for us it was like, you know, you go for the 5 minutes, they're 5 minute stints. And after 5 minutes, usually teams start gassing out. So for Wayne, it's completing your first five sets, kicking it into the corners, and just wait for teams to make mistakes. And he's been doing that over the years. If you have a look at all the teams that he goes in, that's all they do. They just keep it simple, whereas other coaches, they're very technical when it comes to the defence.
I think on the back of that too, and you would probably agree, the game's 80% mental. Like, everyone's physically at a certain point. Everyone has a similar sort of roster. Some have better rosters than others, but the game's mental. And I think he gives them this belief and this aura. I know it's only a couple of games into the year, but we've seen it last year with the Dolphins. You know, getting your best players, the best out of your best players at certain times, just by certain things you say to them, or some of the things you might say to them at training, or if they're down on confidence, you give them that little bit of that confidence hit. And I think he's had that real big impact, as probably some other coaches haven't this year.
Whatever it is he does, I love the impact he has on Indigenous players. You look at last year, you had Hamaso do fantastic, Andrew. Trey Fuller come through up there and produce the goods. He has this effect on Cody and Latrell and the boys that are at the Rabbitohs. Steve Renoff, traditionally back in the days, like, he has a way of taking our play. Is it just because he lets them be themselves? He lets them relax? He makes it comfortable around him and he understands them too? Is that what he works so well with Indigenous players?
Well, yeah, he banks on the ability of the players, and from there it's just giving them confidence. I think with coaches sometimes these days is that, you know, there's a lot of pressure on our coaches, and they try and get on top of the players and play a bit of a chess game kind of strategy with the players. With Wayne, it's all about relational, getting the best out of them and keeping things simple.
Now, you talked about his old club there, the Dolphins, the effect he had there. They're really struggling. They talk about this Wayne Bennett factor.
Yeah.
Every time he leaves a club, it's tougher for the coach there. Christian Wolf up there at the Dolphins. What do you make of his performance at the Dolphins so far? And will there be pressure on Christian Wolf in the next few weeks?
I think with a lot of these coaching situations, you've got to look at the big pictures. Like, you know, Christian Wolf went into that job. They also lost a lot of key leadership positions. They lost the Bromwich brothers. They've also lost Kafusi early in the year. Again, taking over from Wayne Bennett isn't an easy job, but I think with him, Riles as well, in another one of them situations as well, that's sort of taken on a poor roster. And then you've got other situations like Todd Payton, who's, you know, having to juggle up his career at the moment. But just back to that Dolphin situation, I think it's just, they're going to take a little bit of time. You know, I think you just got to get your best players performing really well. I think once Hammer hits his strap, Farnworth, they had a bit of a disruption with the Cyclones to start the year as well. So it is this little bit of a theory, but as long as you keep talking about it, as long as you say that this is the fact and this is what's going to happen, it will continue to happen. But this will test Wolf as well. We'll see what Wolf's all about. You know, there's no pressure on him. He's probably under pressure in the second year. But again, maybe that Wayne factor is real.
I feel like with that too, like, you see coaches that are, like, Wolf was under Wayne. And again, when I was talking about earlier that Wayne keeps things simple, it seems that the coaches that are underneath him and then come into that first grade spot when he leaves is that they don't really follow the pattern. They go into their own sort of patterns. And we can see Christian Wolf at the moment that he's trying to, you know, get in and spark his team up. And I think it's a lot of, you know, defensive systems that he's got in his team at the moment. And with Hamaso, I feel like that he's cooked at the moment. He played over 30 games or around 30 games last year. Yep. And in the All-Stars, you know, he played only a little bit of minutes. But with Christian, I feel like that he's just trying to find his way as a coach in 2025. And the same with Rolsey as well. I feel like that he's got players that are on their way out, and he's trying to deal with players now that are, you know, they're marquee players like the Fox and Lomax, and he's got a couple of young ones. And I feel like with Rolls and Wolf, that they've got about 4 or 5 years to transition, and hopefully, you know, they have a really good side.
So if they're going to be more patient with Rolls and Wolf up there at the Dolphins, what about Todd Payton? Now, every year they have a challenge about who's going to be the first coach to be sacked. Do you think Toddy Payton's the front runner for that at the moment?
Well, it's not looking good because, as you spoke about with them other coaches, they've got time. You know, they've got time. Todd Payton come in, got them to a game before a grand final. But then what they judge you on from there is whether you go to that next level, whether you stay consistent. Unfortunately, it's been a decline over that sort of period of time. So that's when the pressure starts to build. And starting the season 0-3 and then a really tough run to come up, there's going to be a lot of questions. But again, do you start again? That's the hard part. When you start again, it's another 2-3-4 year build. So it's whether you believe in that individual or when you want to go in a new path.
Old Dolly Thompson, he's not a quitter on the field. He's not a quitter off the field there, struggling through it all. But Champo, we saw him last year at the Koori Knockout, and he would have played football for the next... If that knockout went for another 4 or 5 days, Joel Thompson, he'd be still out there, Bathurst, taking hit-ups and making tackles. Such a tough competitor, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. I said in commentary, like, if there was a game of football every day, him and Blake Ferguson, they'd play every single day. But he come through the system, in the NRL system, you know, with the Josh Dugans, with the Blake Fergusons, and I remember playing with him at All-Stars, just how tough he was and how passionate he is about the game. And, yeah, he's probably still got a couple of years left on him. He's probably still one of the toughest, you know, knockout footballers going around at the moment too.
Yeah, and as we talk about knockout, I always look at, when we look at the talent that's in the NRL at the moment, and some teams have developed strong halves and some teams are struggling in the halves, I still feel that the knockout's got a lot to offer, particularly for the halves and the development in the game. Yep. And as a young bloke who played with Jolie last year, Latrell Seagwalt, now he's coming through as a young halfback. Maturity, as we spoke about Braden Trindle early in the game, but as Latrell Seagwalt matures, learns more of the game at the top level, he could be a half that could lead a team around because, you know, we look around some of the teams that are struggling and it's in the halves where they're lacking. Now, Bevan French had to go to England to play.
Yeah.
There's so many good young halfbacks in the knockout that people, recruitment guys, got to get out there and watch and see it as a pathway to the NRL to develop players, much similar to the way they're doing in PNG with a new team coming in and the silk tails for Fiji. But, you know, they'll give us the big sort of robust guys, but the young, smart halfbacks, they're in Indigenous communities. I think we've got to continue to look at the knockout as a pathway for them.
We sure do, and we've got to be proactive around this space. I remember when we were, you know, coming through the NRL and in our world, we'd hear about there's this young kid, Latrell Mitchell and Tari. Albert Kelly's the next big one to come along and play. And you sort of knew that these guys would come through the system and play. The concern that we have right now is I'm not really hearing them sort of names or them players having that pathway. And the knockout is a perfect opportunity example, especially with our individual 15s, 17s, 18s, even in the Koori Knockout themselves, and identifying talent and then really working with that talent. Like you mentioned too, Dean, a lot of the best halves in the comp right now, Daly Cherry-Evans, Hunt, Reynolds, all these guys, they're in their 30s. You know, Cody Walker didn't play in the NRL until his late 20s, and then he's got an eight-year career out of it, but a good eight-year career. So, like you mentioned with Seagwalt, you've got to keep persisting and keep working with them because you might get the best out of them from 26 through to 33. Bevan French had to go overseas to perfect his craft. We want to really see, especially in the NRL, a lot of our players represented, because then what happens is you create more coming through, and then also they give us a voice. They give us a voice because they're leaders in the NRL, but also leaders out in the community as well.
And it's not the talent or their skill on the training field that lets them down. It's their well-being needs off the field that need to be met. A lot of them struggle with homesickness. A lot of them struggle with having money to get through the lifestyle that you need to build a rugby league career. Now, T, we both work at the NRL. This is something that we're going to work hard to address because we see so many of our talented players in the knockouts. They could be leading NRL teams now and evening up that competition, I feel.
Yeah, Dino, like, I feel like the KO, and this is probably where scouts probably need to look at it from a different angle, is that With the grassroots and then the development programs going into the NRL, we look at systems and, you know, playing arm wrestle games and stuff like that. In the KO, you can identify our halfbacks by looking at how they play under pressure, because that's knockout football. Mm-hmm. Knockout football is only 20-minute halves. You know, you see teams, they can crack under pressure straight away or they can perform under pressure, and that's how we've grown up. I feel like, for me personally, me playing Origin, playing for Australia, playing for the Wallabies was all built from knockout football. I knew when I had to play under pressure, I knew how to perform under pressure. But when it comes to the pathways, that's where I feel like our players in the rural areas are not developed. And I think that comes from the resources, like having access to gyms, or, you know, our coaches out there as well, they're underdeveloped because they're not getting the updated systems of what, you know, we're getting in the metro areas. So I feel like there's a lot that's going on, and from a pathway system in New South Wales Rugby League, as you know, Dino, we work with Christian Heffernan really well, and the NRL are trying to build pathways in a non-linear way, that so when our players, you know, our juniors from our 14s up, when they get to that 19, 20-year-old, they're ready and they're developed and they're educated, because that's what it comes down to. It comes down to development on systems and education, and you know, and also I think it might be even something for our Indigenous organisations to start, you know, implementing, you know, other ideas, programs and ideas, and coming together. So there is a lot, but I feel like our players are a bit underdeveloped, but also scouts and clubs need to look at the knockouts a lot differently than looking at it systematically.
I look at, you know, Adrian Davis and Scott Briggs as some of the most talented halves that you're seeing the knockout. Mm-hmm. They can control an NRL team just as good, but probably just didn't have that support off the field and able to adjust to the pressures, I suppose, of NRL. Now, you've coached some really talented young players in the bush in a couple of years that have come down to Sydney and tried to make it. Now, it is, those pressures are tough to get past. It's always easier to go home.
Yep.
We've got to work hard to make that transition easier, particularly for these country boys.
Yeah.
And as T said, you know, NRL is dominated now from Newcastle, Sydney, particularly in New South Wales, Newcastle, Sydney, Wollongong, the big metropolitan cities with all the training. But all of our kids are out there in the bush, the Morees, the Armidales, the Tamworths, the Kempseys, the Coffs Harbours, Lismores. We've got to do some more stuff in those places.
For sure. And I think we've got to be proactive around it, Dina. Like, I don't want to, as I said, I don't want to get 5-6 years' time and go, oh, where are all of our NRL players? They're not represented. I think, like T said, having key organisations come together. As you mentioned, some of our players go to Sydney. They don't have that financial support. They might have just had a child at home. And again, are clubs looking at players right now? Are you ready to play NRL in the next 1 year, 18 months, 2 years? Or again, is this someone that we can work with over the next 4 to 5 years that's going to have that career? Because the smarts, they've got all the talent and all the ability. It's just the physical side of the game, and then also just that commitment to the game continuously, but that opportunity as well, and someone sticking by it is a big thing as well.
Now, Joshy's team, the Bulldogs, got a big game this week up against the Sharks, who have been in great form. I can't wait for that game, but what are the games you're looking forward to watching this weekend?
I'm actually looking forward to the Titans and the Roosters. I know you might go, oh, it's a, you know, two teams that aren't really standing out at the moment. But what I'm loving from the Titans is I'm loving this new combination with Campbell in the halves, Brimson, but also Kinney. I've got a feeling they can have a big year, especially if they can just get their combinations right and defend well. But, yeah, really looking forward to JC's progress as well over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Cowboys-Raiders game. I think this is the game for the Cowboys to start their season. You know, when you see the Canberra Raiders last week against Manly, you know, there was a lot of six agains, there was a lot of mistakes. I don't feel like Ricky's got any ammunition to fire away. So going up to North Queensland is going to be tough for the Raiders.
The Battle of Brisbane always brings the excitement. You know, the Dolphins up against Brisbane. So you can imagine the stadium's going to be electric up there. Yeah. But the Battle of the Fullbacks, Hemiso Tabuai-Fido up against Reece Walsh. I can't wait for this battle.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It's an exciting battle, and I think these two players are just waiting to have that breakout game for the year. It'd be great if both of them could do it. Reece Walsh against Canberra, 6 errors, 5 errors last week. They moved Cobbo back there at some stage last week. I feel like with Reece, last year he tried to overplay his hand and set everything up, and it was sort of a rocks or diamond situation. I think now he's got to understand he's got Reynolds and Hunt there as well, so he can just go out and play his natural game. I know that when you're out of form, it's just getting back to doing the simple things, just working hard, getting your running game on. So hopefully we see that in the weekend, and we can really see season kickstart. But Hamaso on the other side is probably in a bit of a similar situation too.
Yeah, he is, Bo. And I feel like that Hamaso is a bit cooked at the moment. Mm. Last year, 2024, I talked about it earlier, he had a really good season. I think when I was speaking to him in the All-Stars, I think he said he only had like 3 or 4 games last year off. And then, you know, he got into the Origin. You know, he backed up. He had a really good season last year. And then coming into the All-Stars, I could just see that he was just a little bit flat. And I feel like that's how he's started his season, is a little flat. And I don't know whether the Dolphins are, you know, resting him or, you know, taking that training load off him. But I think, you know, for him, he's going to have a bit of a rough patch this year. And The more the Dolphins rest him, the better I think they'll get the best out of him at the back end of the year.
Now, I've seen him in this game, particularly in the past, the Battle of Brisbane, he's had some outstanding performances.
Yeah.
This could be the catalyst just to build him up there. Because what he offers, though, is that unpredictability, the speed, the swerve.
Yeah.
That's exciting. That's what people go on to watch when it comes to Hamisa Tabuai-Fido. And this cauldron at Suncorp is built perfectly for him to come out of this week.
These two players can do what no one else can do. That's why everyone goes to watch them. And that's why we hold them on this high level. They could play a 7 or 8 out of 10 game and we are a little bit critical because we know what their 10 out of 10 games look like. So that's why it's so exciting when these two players come up against each other. Again, I think it's a little bit of fatigue, but also a little bit of confidence. Maybe it's just, you know, early in the year, but this is the perfect opportunity. Big match, big arena. Both of these two players live for it. And it'd be great just to see a big Hamiso run or a Reece Walsh break, just again to get their season ignited.
Well, the form goes out the window when these two teams play each other. Who wins this weekend?
Yeah, you can't go past Brisbane at the moment. They're just on fire. Against their four pack, I think, the Brisbane are going to look like they're going to win it.
What do you make?
Yeah, it's hard. Like you said, you've got to throw the form out the window. And I've seen stranger things happen. I'm going to tip a little bit of an upset then. I think Dolphins get their first win, just like the Cowboys do this weekend, and ease a little bit of pressure off their coaches.
And I'm going to go with you, Bo.
Yeah.
I feel like this week the Dolphins are going to get their first win. And it's going to light up the season for them, and the Hamiso will be outstanding. I reckon he'll have a big game. So make sure you tune in and get out there and watch your footy this weekend. Enjoy.